Hello, welcome to We Speak Dispatch. I'm John here today with Doug in the corner, Joe in the other.
Hello.
Jill, who's going to joining us from Tropical Outside. And our special guest is Julie. Julie, tell us about yourself real quick before we get into things.
Hi there. So happy to be here. Thanks for having me. My name is Julie Bruffloat. I am the ECC Engagement Manager at Rapid SOS for the Great Lakes region. So I cover 5 states, Wisconsin, Illinois, Indiana, Ohio, and Michigan. And in my previous life, I was an I-1 dispatcher in Central Washington State. So I did that for approximately 7 years, almost 10 years total in public safety, though, at the local level in Washington State. And then at some point in my career, I decided to go to the private side. And so I actually trained CAD software for Motorola for almost 5 years before I came to Rapid SOS. And I've been with Rapid SOS for the last year and a half.
Okay, so you've been with at least 2 companies in the private, Motorola and now Rapid, right?
It sounds almost like she can't hold a job, but I'm just saying.
Oh, okay. With that being said, we're continuing our series of topics of going from 911 and transitioning to the private industry or transitioning from the private into 911. But we're going to kind of focus on the former because, Julie, that's your work history kind of thing. So the first question I have for you deals with leadership. What does the leadership style differences or similarities between the public and 911 manager versus leader and versus in the private industry that you're experiencing now or prior to now with the first company?
Wow, John's coming out hot today.
Wow. I was going to say, that's a tough question.
Right? No warm up.
Yeah, it's right in. Here we go.
Hey, you know what? When you're hosting, you're on fire. Let's do it.
All right. So thinking quickly here.
Easy question.
Easy. Come on.
I mean, let me break it down. Let me make it easier. Have you noticed a different style between the managing, leading of a 911 agency versus private with the 2 companies that you've been experienced with?
Absolutely. In the public sector, I think, you know, and it could be different in center to center, of course, but what I'm remembering the most from my day-to-day, you know, operations is that we were always just trying to do the best job we could day-to-day. And so essentially there was not there was an initiative or a drive specifically. It was just to do, you know, top-notch quality service on every single call and care for our community and provide the best services we could. And as long as all of our officers and first responders went home safe at the end of the day and, you know, we got help needed, you know, with the best, most kind and caring customer service we could for every call, that was a good day. Now in the private side, there are initiatives, right? So there are, you know, more stipulations as to, you know, when I was training for Motorola, sometimes, you know, they were more sensitive about overtime or costs or things like that. And so your customer service, you have to gauge it kind of differently. With Rapid SOS, I don't really feel that way. We work a lot of hours, but we absolutely love what we do. But there are more drives for, you know, partners, you know, sharing partner information or that kind of thing. So leadership styles, definitely in the public safety sector were more laid back in my opinion, whereas on the private side, there are company overhead kind of drives and initiatives that you have to pay attention to, and you have to factor that into the job that you're doing, thinking of those things.
John, I would also like to touch base on that.
Yeah.
I've done it in both places. And I would say in private industry, you're not managing people that belong to a union. And in some public places, you're managing people that are in a union. So I think they're almost completely different. And for those reasons, and one of the things in the private part that I worked at was all these call statistics, which is now coming into 911 centers, but this was 12, 15 years ago, where we started to measure how long you're on the phone, how long does it take to answer, how long does one person talk on the phone versus somebody else talk on the phone, how many supervisor calls does one person get versus the next person, why are they getting those? And then the interesting thing for my private was what we call the call wrap-up. Yeah. And it started at 5 minutes where they had 5 minutes where their phone won't even ring for the next call where they could note the account. Mm-hmm. And over time, we took that all the way down to 0 because they would note the account and then talk to the customer and say, this is what I understand about your call. And this is how I've noted your account. Is there anything else I can do for you? The customer says no. Boom, they're back in the queue after they hit close the account. So we went from 5 minutes to zero based on some training and doing things a little bit differently. And then taking those things and improving your 911 center about how long people stay on the phone, how many times are getting supervisor calls, what's their attitude, their tone, are they getting quality assurance and scored calls, and using the data that comes into a 911 center to improve the center itself. It just truly taught me a lot.
Wow. That's a good point, Joy. I also thought about too, like I forgot, yeah. We had quality analysis, you know, we had QA, especially on our medical or our fire pro QA, where, mm-hmm. you know, if we would actually get like a percentage of how many questions we did right in the exact order. And it's a very technical flow. Anybody that's a dispatcher that's pro QA certified knows the drill. And so we had those kind of ratings that we did have to go to, and we did have to get a page out in, you know, 90 seconds of answering the call, which is really hard when you have a difficult caller, you're trying to corral them or get their attention and get the information from them. But then in the private side, I would be rated as a trainer too. I had a class survey that I put out after each class, and that was different. It was like, they actually got the chance to rate me as a trainer. And thankfully I did really, really well, which is good. Yeah. But you know, the public doesn't necessarily get that either. It's either a good call or a bad call, depending on the outcome or how quick you get help there or whether the patient lives or dies. And so, yeah, it is totally different sometimes. And yet, yeah, it's quite a switch.
How's that stress level going from you? I mean, you obviously did EMD and EFD and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. I mean, those are, I've never done EMD before, but just to watch people that have done it, it's really, to me, it sounds extremely difficult. How does it feel going from that to just a regular, now you're doing like a sales call or you're doing some kind of follow-up with somebody? Do you feel that mm-hmm. sense of urgency still, like, I got to get this information from this person, or just not?
Not quite as much. I mean, when you're sitting in the chair and, you know, you're doing CPR in progress, whether it be on an adult or a baby, and you're trying to follow the card right. I know sometimes I would start to like hop to the wrong section. So again, I'm talking about when I was doing pro QA calls, but you'd start to, you're trying to read a flow chart. So ours wasn't on the computer where you just clicked questions and they popped up. You actually had to follow this flow chart. And have you ever seen those crazy flow charts that are like, you know, should you do this at your wedding? If yes, you know, then no. And if no, then yes. And you could go all over the place. That's kind of what it's like. And so when you start to shift to the wrong thing and you catch it, then you have to like, you know, you're starting to give instructions, then you got to hop back and you're like, oh, I'm sorry. You know, but either way, you're going to be dinged a point on your QA. So
Doug, for me with that question, I just want to answer this real quick. I mean, we deal with emergencies and giving CPR, but I tell you what, if ABC or ESPN went out, those people are ticked off. It is an emergency to them if the right show is on when it goes out. So we handle them with as much urgency as we possibly could.
That's the thing. Wow. How's your like connection to people when you're out at an event, like a conference or whatever, like we met you at a conference, like when you're dealing with people, do you still feel that connection to 911? Like, dispatcher come up and talk to you, do you feel a need? I just want to ask you this. You don't have to answer if you want, but do you feel a need to kind of bring that up? Like, I was a dispatcher, as opposed to them saying she's probably just a salesperson, but it's like, do you ever feel like you need to tell them?
Absolutely. Sometimes I do feel the need to reassure them that I understand what their job is like. And of course, every center is just a little bit different. There is that camaraderie. And I definitely, when I was training CAD classes or whatever, and I would show up in front of a group of 10 to 12 dispatchers and they would just look at me like, who are you? We don't even want this new software. You know, nobody likes change or whatever. I would quickly establish a rapport within the first 5-10 minutes. As soon as I drop that information, I could just see the room relax and they're kind of like, okay, she gets it. This isn't going to be horrible. And then built some really awesome lifelong friendships. I still run into those people at conferences, still have relationships with people that I trained 4 or 5 years ago for Motorola. It's really awesome to keep those friendships.
Because that's the thing. I think a lot of times at conferences, I meet vendors that have absolutely no connection to 901. I mean, they're salespeople. And I'm like, here they're telling how great this product's gonna be for you and how great. And I'm like, you've never even been in a comm center. You don't know what it's like. So
do you
get to go visit comm centers around when you're doing rapid? Do you get to go into the comm centers and go like, I wanna watch what's going on or help them or do whatever?
I was hired right at the end of COVID, so I didn't get a chance to travel. But with Motorola, I was in a different comm center every week. And so it was Monday through Friday. Mondays, I'd come home Fridays and I trained Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday in the comm center. I mean, not necessarily on the floor, but you know, in the building or whatever. And so I did, and then go lives and stuff. So probably every 6 weeks or so, I was in on the dispatch floor, either day shift, graveyard shift, something like that for a night shift, working directly with dispatchers, taking live calls. So that kind of gets, that's kind of my little fix that I still get to get for 911 dispatch. I honestly, I wish I could go work a part-time shift somewhere. I miss it so much. I miss
sure, Joe would hire you right now. So I want to go up there.
Well, actually, my shift is hiring.
Oh, there you go.
You just might come just to my shift.
She is closer to the Midwest region. She's the Great Lakes regional manager. I mean, I was going to be close.
There and are that's the case.
Jill's hiring, and that's in Tennessee. So, you know, but that's in a bank.
Amy's actually the region manager for the area. I was the Western region manager, but when I moved here to Illinois to be with my fiance and my stepkids to be in a couple of months. And so I took a position, a smaller position, but working more directly with ECCs. And I'm really excited about that. Cause I just want to talk dispatcher to dispatcher. And dispatcher to com director, so.
Go ahead, Jill. Go ahead.
Oh, I did want to kind of, Doug was asking about like what it's like dealing with the public after being in 911. And for me, the facial expression was a big thing, because you spent 10 years talking on a phone and you didn't have to worry about your facial expressions. But then I also learned I could take a 10-minute story and knock it down to two sentences or a 2-second thing. So I've really applied that to my job now, where I'm able to kind of quickly determine what somebody needs just by asking the correct questions. And I ask those questions, like sometimes people are like, I can't believe you asked that, but I don't care, whatever. So I think that's...
What questions you're asking the public.
I learned not to ask some of them get a little, I don't want to know the answer sometimes, but, I have the whole questioning things and being able to like take those long things and cut them down and really figure out what people want are like two of the skills that I don't think you can just necessarily, it's not something you have, you just kind of learn it over time. So I do appreciate that. And like Julie, I miss the 911 center. I would go back in a heartbeat if I could. I really would. But like going to conferences and talking to people and doing We Speak Dispatch gets my fix and I'm happy. And like, I still get to help people, but just in a different way.
Yeah. And like you said,
you kept the nosiness of 911.
That will never go away.
No, I know. I'll always be nosy too. I really will. I always want to know what's going on. Nice. I think that really was an important question though, because it's really important to establish that rapport and that trust and safety with your customers or whatever, even on the private side. And so they're not going to trust you if you don't know what the job is like, if you don't understand it. I'm not saying they won't per se, you might be able to build that, but it's going to take a lot longer. And I think there is definitely kind of an instant, almost instant rapport that you get from knowing somebody else has sat in that seat for, you know, or relatively significant. I mean, if I was a dispatcher for 90 days and I just quit or something and I told people that, I think they'd kind of be like, okay, you know, they
wouldn't want to. Well, we've seen that at conferences where people have a very limited career and it's like, you were barely in dispatch and you're here telling us how to do it. It's like, really? That doesn't really
matter. Oh, yeah.
So,
or not at all.
Yeah. So it's to me, it's nice when we meet people that were in 911 and gone public or private sector or the reverse, because you get to take so many good skills that we've developed in dispatch out there. I mean, like you said, how to handle calls, how to stop somebody from rambling and getting the right information right there and following protocols, really? Whatever you got. I mean, that's the biggest part of our job is, I think, kind of handling things in a multifaceted way. I mean, you got so many other things going on. I mean, I'm so lucky. I never did EMD, thank God. But it's like, I didn't follow these protocol things and I cannot imagine. It sounds really difficult. I don't want a part of it.
What skill set, Julie, would you say that you've taken from the 911 center and applied to your job at Rapid SOS?
Wow, good one.
That is a good question. I have to think about that a little bit. I guess the easiest one to go with would be customer service. So Jill was mentioning earlier how you had to kind of learn to have a face, or some people have to learn more that, oh, now my face is visible. For me, that wasn't really something that I ever struggled with in 911. I mean, I think everybody gets frustrated, you know, or you have a nasty caller and after you hang up, you know, you might, you know, experience some emotions, whether it's frustration or, you know, gosh, I can't believe how ridiculous that seems, that complaint right after I just took a really serious emergency or something. Yeah. But customer service has always been at the core of my being. That's been one of my really strong skill sets or whatever. So no matter how nasty the caller was, it's not hard for me to control my tone and keep a very polite, even tone, empathize with the caller if needed. And so that's something that carried through from 911 to Rapid SOS, because I think it's just kind of built in my core being. But that was the easiest one I could think of. Sorry, I'll have to think.
I would love to see somebody who went from 911 to the public sector when somebody in front of them is saying something really stupid and you're like, go ahead. You're like, wait a minute, sorry, I didn't hit mute.
Right. I know. I never really trusted the mute button. That was one of the
things. I didn't either.
No. If you just don't trust it and you just don't roll your eyes or you don't say something under your breath, you're muted because you never know how that's going to turn out. And thankfully, I never really had any, never had any bad open mics because of that.
Open mics. Oh, God.
Hot mics. They can get you in trouble.
Oh, my. Wow. Do you ever, when you're out like selling product, I mean, and that's kind of your thing, you're selling the products, but it's like when you're doing that, what is the like feedback from dispatchers who are using your products? I mean, because we get a lot of different vendors and stuff, like there's a lot of people out there selling stuff for dispatch. Yeah. And sometimes they get stuff that they really don't use completely. You know, they get like some product and they're like, oh, it does this. And you're like, it does so many other things besides that. But the agency has chosen not to show you all these things. Like we had at where I used to work, we had a vendor come in and put in this great phone system and it looked great. And so we were like, what are all these features? And the people from the actual phone place were saying, it has all these things to do all these things. I'm like, where are they? And they're like, well, they're hidden. Your agency doesn't want you to use them. I'm like,
right. Yeah, I've been there.
It's like, oh my God.
And part of that could be trouble too in the implementation process. If the implementation process before it came down to the end user training, if the trainer didn't explain how this could be used or really kind of do their research on the agency to try to see how this could be of a benefit to help kind of tailor to their processes, or if they didn't have the capability to do that before, if that would be helpful, then unfortunately things like that can slip through the cracks. And so that was really frustrating for me if I didn't do the implementation training for the agency, but I showed up as an end user and I'm like, hey, pull up SI something, you know, pull up this or whatever. And they'd be like, oh, I don't know what that is. We weren't taught it in end user training. Maybe the person that was doing kind of the implement setup admin training or whatever, just either didn't cover it with the agency to show it to them or said, oh, you don't want to use this without really seeing if it can work for them. That can be really frustrating as on the private side, as a trainer or whatever, showing up later and saying you weren't shown how to use that. Or I think I can think of a million ways outside of the box that this feature in this module, the software that you already paid for would be really helpful to you. So that's just kind of going back on Motorola. As far as Rapid SOS, the feedback that we get is pretty awesome. So, you know, not sitting here trying to stow.
I'll be editing that out right now. So it's a cut.
The best part of Rapid SOS is that it's free to public safety. And we've always been free to public safety. Yes. And so our feedback is really, really good for the most part for those people that are actually using us because they know, we're providing it at no cost to them because we're so invested in the mission of getting this information into their hands so they can get it to their first responders in the field. One of the biggest complaints so that I do hear from people that don't use like the portal or whatever and just use location information through integrations is they say, oh, you know, it's just another thing to log into. And we know that screen real estate is kind of at a premium in dispatch. You already have so many screens you have to monitor. And thankfully monitors are getting cheaper. And so we can have more in front of us, but there's still a limit to how many you can monitor. And so people think like, I don't have a separate screen to just dedicate to that. So we just tell people like, even if you can just be logged in, even if you have another tab open and you're using another program on top of it, when it comes down to any question of location or whether there's supplemental data, just then pull up the tab and log in. But overall, our feedback is overwhelmingly great, which is pretty awesome. It's a pretty awesome company to work for when just about 99.9% of people are happy with your products. So
we use the product. We would echo those sentiments, Doug. We would absolutely echo those sentiments. We've been using the product for a while, and all the dispatchers there where I work do definitely like it.
Yay. That's awesome to hear.
Wow. I'll be editing Rapid wants to be a sponsor, then we'll be all in business. But
I sure wish. I mean, I never had Rapid SOS when I was a dispatcher. I say it was around, but actually it wasn't. I mean, I left the dispatch field in early 2016. And so it wasn't even out there yet. So that was one of my first missions when I started working as the Western Region Manager. I signed up my home agency, Kick on 911.
Oh, that's kind of cool. They have it now.
It was amazing. Cool. Yeah.
Nice.
They have it now then.
Yeah, they do. Yep. And they use it.
They do have it now. Okay, great. Well, this has been a great episode. And like you said, Julie, a lot of positive feedback will come from this. So perhaps we'll have you on in the future to talk more about this kind of series that you can enlighten us on going from public to private and double private. And at least you were one of the individuals who not only can walk the walk, but can talk the talk from donning on that headset at one time. Mm-hmm. So thanks everyone for tuning in and giving us a shout to Doug, Jill, Joe, and of course, Julie. And Julie, you're in Illinois, yes?
Yes.
Yes, and congratulations for your upcoming
Thank you.
Yes.
Marriage. Congratulations. So I hope you're hearing us on multiple platforms. Joe, if you can take us out and remind everybody how we're doing across the world.
Oh, we are everywhere. 35 different countries. We just rolled over 13,000 plays. That's only on the podcast platforms. If not counting YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, or TikTok. So make sure you're viewing us on TikTok, and we will see you at an upcoming soon to be new episode. Thanks everybody for watching.
Courtney, and you've been listening to another great episode of We Speak Dispatch, proudly sponsored by our friends at Zybex.